Shrimad Bhagavad Gita has chapter 16, the divine and divine act natures, text number 8. Asatyama pratishtam te jagarahuranishvaram aparashparasambhutyam kemanyakamahaitukam asatyam unreal apratishtam without foundation te they jagat the cosmic manifestation ahu say anishvaram with no controller aparashpara without cause sambhutam arisen kimanya there is no other cause kama ahai to come it is due to lust only. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation and no God in control. They say that it's produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Purport. The demoniac conclude that the world is phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose. Everything is unreal. They say that this cosmic manifestation arises due to chance, material actions, and reactions. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory that the world has come about in its own way, that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter. And they do not accept the Supreme Spirit. Everything is matter only. And the whole cosmos is supposed to be a mass of ignorance. According to them, everything is void. And whatever manifestation exists is due to our ignorance and perception. They take it for granted that all manifestations of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream, we may create many things which naturally have no existence. Then when we are awake, we see that everything is simply a dream. But factually, although the demons say that life is a dream, they are very expert in enjoying this dream. And so instead of acquiring knowledge, they become more and more implicated in their dreamland. They conclude that as a child is simply the result of sexual intercourse between man and woman, this world is born without any soul. For them, it is only a combination of matter that has produced the living entities, and there is no question of the existence of the soul. As many living creatures come out from perspiration and from a dead body, without any cause, the whole living world has come out of the material combinations of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material nature is the cause of this manifestation, and there is no other cause. They do not believe in the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Siyate Satyaracharam. Under my direction, the whole material world is moving. In other words, among the demons, there is no perfect knowledge of the creation of the world. Every one of them has some particular theory of his own. According to them, one interpretation of the scriptures is as good as another. They do not believe in the standard understanding of the scriptural injunction. So the verse again. Asatyam apratishtam te jagara huranishvaram aparashparam sambhutyam They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say that it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. So practically everyone in the material world has some of these conceptions. And Bhagavad Gita is meant to give us an opportunity, first of all, to theoretically understand that these conceptions are wrong, and then to practically to perceive what is actually reality. But here Krishna mentions the demoniac vision of the universe, how it's unreal, that nothing is, there's no controller, that is simply a product of material desire, that we perceive different things. So, this is broken down in many divisions in Bhagavad Gita. For instance, in the fourth chapter, Krishna says, Vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mama pashitya bhava gana tapasa puta madhvavam agata. Being freed from attachment and from fear and from anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, thus they all attained transcendental love from me. In other words, there are certain types of emotional experience we have in the material world that cause us to not see things properly. Prabhupada devised in the purport that there's materialists who think that everything came out of matter. Of course, it's illogical to think that everything came out of matter, because if everything came out of matter, then why doesn't dead matter produce life? Why doesn't these walls become alive? Or the floor get up and leave one day? Or the windows talk back to you? So why is that matter remains matter? And yet, when the soul leaves the body, why doesn't the body produce another soul? Why is it the body stays dead? So this they can't answer, and if you give them a logical argument like that, they don't understand what you're talking about. To them, you're wrong. Matter is what makes everything alive. You just don't believe it. And I guess if you take enough intoxication, then everything does become alive. So they say the world is unreal, it's only material. And the other ones say that, yes, there's spirit, but it's impersonal. Even if you go back to the spiritual world, then the conception of the spiritual world is that you have a spiritual body, or you have some, but you're eternally doing the same things as you do here. Fear of a personal spiritual existence. They think if you go back to the spiritual world, if you have enemies there, you fight with them forever, eternally. And if you have some service you don't like to do, you have to do it forever. They assign you to washing the pots in the spiritual kingdom, and that's all you do forever, just wash pots. And since the prasadam is so good in the spiritual world, no one ever leaves any remnants, so you starve in the. You never get to eat any prasadam. You just wash pots all day long, day and night, forever. So they can't really conceive of what spiritual existence of. They just equate it from our present material existence. And the last is those who are voidous, as Prabhupada mentions here. They think that after we leave this body, everything's finished. We just disappear. Therefore, it's completely frustrating. You could be the biggest criminal in the world, and you're the biggest saint. Makes no difference, because at the end, you all disappear anyhow. It's all useless. So that kind of philosophy has led to people acting irresponsibly. They don't believe in karma. They don't believe in reincarnation. They don't believe in getting the results of your work. Therefore, even though the philosophy is illogical, because after all, if we're going to have a philosophy, it must be based hopefully on something which is experience. And if we look at the universe, we can see it's orderly, intelligently designed, that it's going on according to with intelligence. So how can we assume that the creator of the universe, or whatever created the universe, has no intelligence? Because how did intelligence fit into the equation of the universe? Just like we assume that when someone makes a machine, they must have some intelligence to make it. Even a simple machine, like a shaving electric shaver. We don't assume it just assembled, self-assembled. The material nature just got inspired and became a shaving razor. No, we know that someone there must be some person with consciousness and intelligence who created it. Similarly, this body, which has so many wonderful machines, parts of it, where we can see through it, we can hear with it, we can smell with it, we can eat food and it digests. If we get a cut, naturally there's a mechanism by which it repairs itself. So what scientist can make such a machine? As I usually say, you can put grass in one end and the other end you get milk. Can the scientists make such a machine? You mow the lawn and you just put the grass in the machine, and then the other side you get nice milk. But Krishna has made that machine. It's called the cow. But no one appreciates Krishna's creation. They never give him credit. Instead, they'll spend billions of dollars trying to figure out how to create one blade of grass. There's so much grass everywhere, but they're going to waste money trying to create a blade of grass. Someone has already created unlimited blades of grass, but they'll waste money trying to create one blade of grass so they can take credit as being the creator. So obviously these people are insane, but in the society of the of fools, they say, it's folly to be wise. In other words, with a little bit of common sense and of observation, one can understand that these arguments have no basis in experience or reality. But they're made by people who have only one objection in mind, to eliminate the possibility that there can be actually a supreme person. The whole material world is simply a fight between those who want to establish Krishna as supreme and those who want to deny Krishna as supreme. And the Bhagavatam is full of stories of demons who are always fighting the demigods. So this is going to go on eternally. If we want to stay around here and see who's going to win, we'll have to be here forever, because no one ever wins this fight. There's people who are determined to be demons, and those go on fighting. Even the demigods kill them, no one dies. So as long as people want to be demons, they're going to stay in the universe in different species of life. And if they finally get a human form of life or whatever they get, then they'll go on fighting. So this is a perpetual fight between the demons and the devotees. The only question is which side that we want to be on. Do we want to imagine ourselves to be a product of the material nature and try to dominate the material nature unsuccessfully? Because anyone can see that we can't even stop the body from changing even for a moment. Now, if we had any ability to control, at least our fingernails, we should just command, stop growing. Wait a second, stop. I told you stop. We can't even command our fingernail. And yet we're trying to take over the whole universe. So this is called foolishness. And Krishna has given us Bhagavad Gita, for instance, but then Krishna says, Agyas Shastra Danas Cha, Samshayatma Vinashati, Namnyam Lokastina Paro, Nasukam Samshayatmaha. But ignorance and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures go to ruin and perish. For the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world or in the next. So there are different types of doubting people who doubt Krishna. One class, they have known nothing about Bhagavad Gita, nor do they care to know anything about it. As a matter of fact, they're averse to hearing about it. And therefore, they have no faith, whatever, because they have nothing to base their faith on. I have faith in Bhagavad Gita, at least. Others, they know the Bhagavad Gita, they can recite it by heart, some people, but they have no faith in the instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. Other people believe in the instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, but they don't believe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course we know, some people even believe Krishna is God, but they do nothing to serve Him. And others, they believe Krishna is God and they do service, but they want some material benefit in return. So there are different degrees of knowledge and faith, or faithlessness, and it's all gifted by Krishna. Naham prakasha sarvarsha yogamaya samavrita mudoyam navijananti lokoyam ajam avyam. That I'm never manifested to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I've always created, covered by my creative energy called yogamaya, and so the deluded world knows me not. I'm unborn and inexhaustible. So Krishna is simply sitting in our heart, and He's going to help us whatever we want. If we want to know Him, He'll help us. And if we want to deny Him, He'll also, to some degree or another, He'll give us whatever we desire. He'll give us the conception, He'll give us the circumstances, He'll give us the association, He'll give us the experiences that will justify whatever we want to do in the material world. But if we want to make a sacrifice, if we want to do some austerity, we want to do something to please Krishna, then Krishna will also reveal Himself proportionally as we develop that desire. So that the mistake of thinking that this whole world is going on without a cause, without a controller, that it's just a dream or a nightmare, depending on how you look at it, and that the only purpose of existence, the reason why things go on at all, is due to sex desire, due to lust. Lust is what motivates the dead energy, ourselves, to go on. Which, anyhow, this is the demoniac philosophy. On the other hand, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, even people do want to believe in God. If they hear the holy name, they get association with Him. So Krishna is so merciful. Even people have come to run away from Him. Still, He comes He comes as the holy name in Kali Yuga. So even they want to avoid Him, but still He comes personally and gives people the chance to associate with Him. The only thing is that we have to develop some intelligence also, so that we can have confidence that what we're doing is correct, that we're not, as people keep on telling us, we're not crazy, we're not the parasites of the world. We should be out working and doing something valuable for society, like making grenades or tanks or something. Do something helpful, discover some new chemical, or just break bricks, whatever. Somehow or another, get money and enjoy your senses, and then you're a good person. Because there's no such thing as higher consciousness unless you take drugs. Then you can experience higher consciousness. Otherwise, spiritual life is the opiate of the people. Taking opiates is very nice. That's normal. You can dream and experience whatever you want. But religion, trying to become God conscious, then you're a threat to society. You're a threat to the normal behavior, society. As such fanatical religionists are usually against illicit sex, meat eating, and gambling, the normal activities of the human being. So therefore Krishna says, Yani Sha Sarabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Samyami Yasyam Jagrati Sam Yasya Jagrati Samyami Sanu Sha Pashutomune. So whether it is night for all sentient beings, it is a time of awakening for the self-control. And what is the night for the self-control is this time of awakening for all beings. So there's always going to be some people who think that the material universe is just a phantasmagoria. There's no logic or reason behind it. There's no controller, there's no purpose behind it. And therefore the only thing to do is to gratify whatever the whims of our senses are as much as possible. And there's others who actually understand we're not this body, we're spiritual beings, and that at least the goal of human form of life is to get free from our material misconceptions and realize our spiritual identity. And that's the side Krishna is on. Ukramantam sitim vapi punjanavanaganvita vimuro nanapashanti pashanti gyana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those who train their knowledge can see all this clearly. So Krishna calls anyone who's not understanding that they're a spiritual being a mudha. Now, mudha is actually quite a strong name to give to someone. Is that right in India? Mudha, if you call someone a mudha, it's not a very nice thing to say to them. They don't appreciate it.
It's quite insulting, actually.
Yeah. Well, I was distributing books in one airport in Philadelphia. There was one Indian gentleman who was a Christian. And when Indians become Christian, they become the most fanatic Christians. They have something to prove. So he thought his goal to save us, to save the world, to serve Jesus Christ, was to try to break up every sale that we had of our Bhagavad Gita in the airport. So he stood there telling people that we were of the devil, don't take the book, we're Satan, we're worse than Satan. Satan is a saint compared to us. So anyhow, this devotee got frustrated after some time. He walked up and said, "You're a mudha." So the man froze, the Indian gentleman. And he turned pale and ran off. And around 10 minutes later, the police came. And the police said, "So what was the problem?" He said, "He called me a mudha." So the policeman looked at him, "Called you a what?" "A mudha." "So what?" So the policeman walked away. And the man turned 3 shades of different colors. And he practically had a heart attack and ran away. Because he was a mudha. So, Krishna says anyone who doesn't understand that they're not their body is a mudha, is on the same level as a cow or an ass. So that seems very strong, that we're criticizing so many prominent, exalted people with so much talent. But as Prabhupada used to say, we're not doing it, Krishna's doing it. Anyone who's in the bodily concept of life is on the same level as an ass or a cow. And although they may be displaying what human society evaluates as being very exalted, but actually it's more exalted than any other animal. I mean, animals have quite exalted qualities. Some of them can fly. Some of them can swim underneath the ocean. Some of them can see long distances. So what's the great thing that human beings can do? What is it? They can kick a ball into a net or something, and then they become... What is the value of that? At least if you can see a long distance, then you can find out where food is or do something useful. But kicking a ball in the net, what is the value of it? Or you make an invention, What is the value of making an invention where you can kill people? People are going to die anyhow. You don't have to kill them any quicker than it's necessary. Therefore, people are actually outside of Krishna consciousness. People are just mudas because they don't know who they are. They don't know what the goal of life is. They see everything wrong. They do everything wrong. But they simply give each other prizes and titles. And they praise each other. And they write books about each other. But they're just one fool praising another fool. Therefore, one should try to understand. But of course, we don't tell people that, except in class. Because they're also Krishna's eternal servants, and we're trying to help them, and therefore we have to try to explain things appropriately. But we understand that the people that we're dealing with are more or less crazy. They're intoxicated by material misconceptions. So we have to treat them nicely so that we can introduce Krishna to them. Otherwise, they'll think Krishna is a very insensitive person. That he says, Tanaham Dvishatam Kurang, Samsareshan Aradamam, Shipram Yajasam Ashuvam, Asri Shveva Yonishu. That those who are mischievous, who are envious, who are the lowest among man, I cast into the demoniac species of life. It doesn't sound like someone you would like to meet in a dark alley. And then he says, I push them down, Asram Asram Bhavam Ashitya, Muda Janmini Janmini, Mama Shri Paipa Kondiya Tatoyati Param Gatim. I push them down and down further into the most demoniac species of life, and they never get a chance to attain me. So it sounds like a pretty cruel God we have here. Pretty insensitive. You try, oh, let me up. Now you're down, down. Help. God, no, I am God, so too bad. You're done. Ah, you don't like me, I don't like you either. No, it's Krishna is actually very kind. He's simply giving people what they want. If they want to become into the lower species of life, which in some respects is much better than a human form of life. If you become a dog, especially, well, nowadays, and if you become a dog in modern civilization, you get it, then you have a much better life than your owners have. A lot of times they give the dog, if you have a good owner, a dog house. You have your own house. You don't have to pay for it. It's free rent. You get free food. You have nothing to do. All you do is have to bark. And if you have really nice owners, you just wag your tail and they pet you. Now, if we had a tail, we could wag it. Who would pet us? But if you're a dog, then people pet you. So it's a nice life. Free food, free room and board. You don't have to get no education, no bills, nothing. Just eating and sleeping. You're off 24 hours a day. So it's not a good thing to become a dog, but it certainly is not a good thing to become a human being who has no idea about what the purpose of life is or how to achieve it. Therefore, a human form of life is meant for a spiritual education, which is real education. Otherwise, people would be misled by this absurd philosophy that everything came out of nothing. And they call that science. That if everything came out of nothing, why aren't more things coming out of nothing? Why? What was the big event that caused everything to come out of nothing, and then nothing decided to retire? There's no more nothing. It all became something. And now, if nothing became something, then there's no more nothing anyhow. So now we should try to actually make something out of the nothing. Something valuable. That's called Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Krishna, sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness and they have jobs or school or things like this, and for them this seems like very valuable. So when should we encourage them to do this duty, and when should we tell them that, look, this duty is not...
They'll figure it out. We don't have to tell people. We're not, practically speaking, we're not in the position to right now to engage anyone. We don't have the means. We don't know how to engage people. But in the course of time, when there's generally people have in a normal civilization, then people spend 25 years in student life, 25 years in household life, 25 years in retired life, and 25 years in renounced life. But things that we haven't organized society so well so far, so there's no definite time. People will find naturally where they're, according to their inclinations and their abilities. But we can encourage people to, wherever they're at now, we can encourage them to prepare for the next stage. And as much as they're willing to do so, they'll do so. We don't tell people to do anything because we hardly know what we're doing. So we should spend most of the time trying to prepare ourselves. And if we want to help people, then try to develop a vision by becoming more Krishna conscious so we can give people good advice how to prepare for their one situation to the next so they can prepare for the end of life and remember Krishna at the end of life. So that's helpful by preparing for a life of gradual renunciation, gradual cultivation of knowledge that can encourage renunciation. But that has to be done gradually. So generally speaking, we're just trying to introduce the culture of Krishna consciousness, the culture of learning how to properly associate with devotees, with others, just other human beings, associate with them in order to invoke our spiritual consciousness. We're just trying to learn that ourselves, how to do that. And we can encourage people to go on with the learning process ourselves and how to develop spiritual habits. Habits of time management, habits of relational management, habits of money management, how to develop habits that are conducive for spiritual cultivation. And then engage in service. Utilize their energies in service. And if they do that, then naturally they'll develop some experience in Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will give them the intelligence how to proceed on to their path of spiritual enlightenment. But we don't have vanashram, we're not in charge of, you know, we have no ability to handle right now people who just decided to become renounced. If they decide to become renounced, they should have some realization, not artificially become renounced. They should have some detachment from material things so they can actually live a life of renunciation and a life dedicated to devotional service. So that takes practice and experience and cultivation of knowledge and mercy from Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
What's the next? You talked about preparing for next stage. So what's the next stage for someone who comes to Krishna consciousness that's 35 or something, and there's no...
Well, we have to form small groups where people get a chance to learn how to associate with others, similar-minded people, and reveal their experiences in Krishna consciousness and hear from others, take prasadam together, eventually learn how to express, how to cultivate good habits that will lead to higher consciousness, how to engage in service together. We have to get people in smaller groups so they have some personal association and they can get encouraged and direction from others. They can have some friends, similar friends in Krishna service, and also engage in some service so that They actually utilize their talents and the energies that they have, their inspirations, their experiences, in a way that's eternally productive, that will give them eternal benefit. So we have to organize small groups so that people get a chance to, and then big groups also, so that all the small groups can come together and get inspiration from the big group. But they need, everyone needs personal association and opportunities. They need appreciation and opportunities for service. Not just the few people living in the temple, but everyone. Anything else? Khala Grantharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.